evening. Welcome to the Salyer Report. Today is December 3rd, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Upcoming events, I'm going to be out in Marin County, outside of the San Francisco and San Francisco Bay Area, on January 16th to 17th for the Architects of the New Paradigm Conference. I'm going to be talking about power, privacy, and transparency. It's an all-star crowd. We're going to have Joel Garbon from the New Energy Movement and Richard Dolan. We'll be talking about false flags. Very interesting. He's writing a book, and he's talked about it on the Salyer Report, but I'm sure it would be great to see him in person. So I hope if you're in the area, you'll come out. You can link to it from events on our website. January 27th, 2016, I'm going to be at the Economic Roundtable of the Ohio Valley in Marietta, Ohio. And then just to let you know, I'm working tentatively on plans for Australia in May, Scotland in June, France and Germany in July, and New Zealand in November. France and Germany in July is definite, but the others are still, we're still working on it, and I'll keep you posted. But if you're interested in lunches or dinners or anything else during that period, let us know and we'll see what we can organize. Okay, I've said it before, but now I'm really going to say it. We're hoping to launch our new website with a new launch date of January 4th, the week we come out with the new annual wrap-up. You'll be hearing more about it as we get closer. We've been working on this for over 2 years now, and we really hope it improves your subscribing experience. Our theme tonight is from Sir Walter Scott. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. You're watching lies compounded as things change into another round of lies, to another round of lies, more party involved, another round of lies. And then you get what I call pretzel talk. Nothing makes sense, and everybody's talking convoluted. Things are going in circles. It certainly applies to the Middle East, and everybody's explanation of who and what ISIS is. As you know, I think they're mercenaries, and they work for who pays them. But the lies aren't holding up because you're seeing more and more people following the flow of the oil and money. The network's learning too fast, and you have too many intelligence agencies, including Mr. Putin, who's willing to disclose some of the, sort of the intel. Anyway, so you're definitely watching the Midianite thing go on in terms of the Middle East, but we're also seeing it elsewhere. The climate change conference is going on in Paris. Paris is, interestingly enough, on lockdown as a result of the terrorist attack, very conveniently, right before the Paris conference, and memorial services literally before the day before the conference opened, and I think that's protected them from a lot of the activist actions. There's so many lies on climate change, you don't even know what to say. My favorite was we had a picture of four presidents, the Canadian president, the Indian president. We had Barack Obama, and right in the middle of all the different presidents was Bill Gates, if you can imagine that. So can you imagine Bill Gates on climate change leadership? His house is 66,000 square feet, sort of the ultimate in be the change you want in the world. And, of course, he made his money engineering the destruction of privacy throughout the world. And you look at these guys and you think, they're going to lecture us? Very bad. Money and markets. IMF has approved the yuan for inclusion in the SDR starting on October 1st, 2016. It has a 10.92% weighting. The U.S. dollar is at 41.9%. It is the first non-U.S. ally to be in the IMF SDR system. So that is a real structural indication of what I call moving to a multipolar world. China has done a great deal over the last year and a half to build out the liquidity around its global currency and build the infrastructure to provide that liquidity. They're clearly driving to make the yuan a global reserve currency, or one of the reserve currencies, which is what the SDR system includes. I think they have a long way to go. But what was very interesting, and I did not expect, but was almost, I almost fell off my chair, was that essentially the dollar took no cut in the SDR system. The U.S. is going from 41.9% to 41.73%. The euro going from 37.4% to 30.93% points. They took the euro took the biggest hit. The pound's going from 11.3 to 8.09. So the biggest hit in terms of percentages was the pound. The yen going from 9.4 to 8.33. So you take a look at that and you say, wow, that's, you know, I have to tell you, I think that's all a form of black budget technology and military. So, you know, that's the power of force. And the same time, I see it essentially as a sign of weakness, because the dollar is clearly protecting or fighting for its reserve currency status, and it's going to have trouble holding on. You see extraordinary sort of coming apart in the euro land. The whole eurozone is really fraying. You have an increase in the difficulty of getting integration on some of the key points. Bank deposit insurance is probably the latest important glitch. And more talk of different countries having basically a plan B if the eurozone comes apart. My guess, if you look at the SDR, is the Brits made a side deal, and wouldn't I love to know what that side deal is, but I'm going to keep an eye on what's going on between the Chinese and the Brits and see how it plays out. I posted a while back a very good article from The Economist called Dangerous and Dominant about the U.S. dollar, and it explains why the dollar is going to remain the reserve currency for quite some time. The yuan is very far away from being able to provide any kind of reserve currency liquidity, but it's coming on fast. Now, why is that important to you and me? A great deal of the subsidy that Americans have enjoyed has come from the fact that our currency is the reserve currency. Now, we've had to pay out a lot in terms of the cost of military and obviously the black budget. And the financial coup d'etat has really raped the place. But the model is clearly wearing thin. And it's one of the reasons we're seeing more and more lockdown in the United States. And there's real fear among the leadership of proceeding with the necessary reengineerings that's going to have to happen on the U.S. budget without the necessary control of the population. We saw an article in the Wall Street Journal this week saying the U.S. is considering, if you haven't paid your taxes, they could revoke your passport. We're seeing more headlines on vaccinations. If you don't get the vaccinations, you can't get certain jobs. If you don't get the vaccinations, you can't go to certain schools. Now we see in Illinois a hospital, and I sent it into the website under topics, saying if you haven't gotten your vaccinations, they won't treat you at that hospital. And, of course, I talked last time about the veterans, more pressure on the vets to get vaccinations. We saw another shooting in San Bernardino, California. There's a deeper story here, not that I necessarily know what it is. When I was the lead financial advisor to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, I had one of my analytics guys working on a big data dump on the single-family portfolio, and he came to me and he said, you're not going to believe where the number one largest foreclosure portfolio is in the whole, and defaulted mortgages in the whole country. And so I said, you know, I made a couple of guesses based on size. And he said, no, you're not going to believe it. It's San Bernardino. And when you looked at the number of defaulted mortgages and foreclosed homes, it was significantly larger than the number of people in San Bernardino and the area. So you knew something pretty fraudulent was going on. Now, if you look at that part of Southern California, you know, if you draw a wide circle, you're talking about massive amounts of black budget facilities and operations. So it looked to me like there was clearly a connection. So I was 1997 or 98. I was out having at a sort of a social Sunday brunch in the suburbs of Washington. And the woman next to me turned out to be the chief of staff to the chairman of Freddie Mac. And she said to me, you're not going to believe, I just finished doing an analysis of where our defaulted mortgages and foreclosures are. And you're just not going to believe the number one area. And I said, oh, I know, it's San Bernardino. And she almost fell off her chair. She said, how do you know? And I said, well, it's the same at the FHA. And we did a calculation of how much defaulted paper they had and how much the FHA had. And again, many multiples of how many people possibly lived in San Bernardino, and many, many multiples of the, I suspect, the number of houses. And that's why whenever anything funny happens in San Bernardino, I sort of say, what's the, you know, what's up? Now, whenever you have a shooting in a very heavily trafficked black budget area, one of the things I worry about is it's a sign that they didn't have much time to put it on, and so they did it close to home. I know that's quite an intuitive leap, but it's one of my suspicions whenever I see these things. Interestingly enough, it was near a building where you had the Department of Public Health meeting in a conference area, and you sort of, given everything that's going on in public health out in California, it makes you wonder. But I think these things are signs not only of not just political lockdown, but real fear of cash flow problems and its deflation warning. I put a link to an article up on the website, which I think is a clear indication of the pressure on governmental budgets. Prison abuse victim shot dead just before he could collect $450,000 settlement. If you, the reason I put it up is, if you want my guess, yes, I think they shot him so they wouldn't have to pay out the $450K. That's how tight things are. And if you whether it's San Bernardino or a prison victim being shot before he gets his money, I just think the rubber band is stretched very, very, very tight. Another sign of deflation article in the Journal this week about how companies are not doing IPOs. IPOs are down 63% this year, and companies are going public. And that's a variety of different reasons, but it's not a good sign. And essentially, corporations are sitting on cash or buying each other. They don't see opportunity in the market. Probably the most frightening things that happened this week is Alex Jones did an interview of Donald Trump. And there goes Alex Jones. It was, for somebody who's supposed to be fighting for freedom, it was off-putting, pathetic, and inexcusable. I mean, Trump is a guy who's just been talking about how we ought to get Muslims to wear identifying marks on their clothes and consider rounding them up and putting them in camps. So you're talking about somebody who's pushing a very totalitarian agenda. And for Alex Jones to treat him like he's for real, or to honor him because of what he says. I mean, all these guys say what's on their script. And the idea that Trump is a self-made man or his own man is a bunch of hooey. I mean, this is a guy who ran casinos. He's an egomaniac. He's a bully. This is not a nice person. And there are a couple possibilities. One is he's whiting out for the Bushes, which what I originally thought is just sort of whiting out the competition. Or the other is he's whiting out all the Republicans for Clinton. Or, I don't know, you know, for all I know, this thing has gotten carried away and the powers that be are just having fun promoting totalitarianism and getting everyone who's supposed to be on the conservative side to buy into it and support it, which is insane. I mean, you're supporting proposals that will be used against you, not against immigrants or not against Muslims. They'll be used against you. So you're talking about somebody who's promoting lawlessness of a first order. And frankly, it doesn't matter what he says. He's playing a script. I mean, the idea that anybody would support a presidential candidate based on what they said as opposed to their character and what they've done is nuts. You know, so the guy walks around and says things that are attractive on anti-vaccines or anti-common core, and all of a sudden he's okay. No, he's not. He's a puppet, just like the rest. The idea that this guy is independent, he's on a leash from the banks. I mean, this is a guy who knows how to run casinos, build flashy buildings, and basically file bankruptcy. And you know, so if you want somebody who knows how to file bankruptcy, here's the guy to bankrupt the United States and file bankruptcy. But the thought that he should be taken seriously, now you can say, well, it's the entrainment. But at some point, it's what I wrote in the commentary, wrote about Trump. Are you not entertained? This is making it easy for the leadership to turn to the world and say it's okay to abrogate our contracts to the American people because they are not worthy of respect. So this is very dangerous stuff. You know, and when you turn to the other side, you know, the idea that Clinton's the leading candidate on the other side, it's basically a message that crime plays. This is a person who, with her husband, is running around the world collecting bribes and racketeering between, you know, the Secretary of the State and the Clinton Foundation. And basically, both of them send a message to the world that the United States is not a place to be taken seriously. We had a cover of Forbes talk about Bill and Melinda Gates. We had a cover of Forbes coming out with Melinda Gates saying, talking about, you know, empowering women and how this was, it was called the best idea in the world. We're going to empower women. It's all part of this promoting women thing. And the notion, if you look at where Bill Gates and Melinda Gates' money came from and what it's being used for, the notion that this is anything but perverted and absurd is, you know, you don't know what to say. But at some point, if we want change, we're going to have to start to support real leaders and shun, you know, basically shun criminals and bullies. So I continue to meet very intelligent, sensible people who think it's a plan to support or vote for these people. And I find it, frankly, I find it more appalling that anyone would support any of these people than, you know, I understand why they're doing it. You know, there's a logic to it. Why anyone, we seem to be a country with too many Patty Hearst. So now in defense of the American people on Black Friday, there was one thing, one set of retail sales that went very well. 185,000 people got background checks so they could buy guns. That's an all-time record. So so somebody knows something. Anyway, but you know, we on one hand, we have the fascist Trump thing, and on the other hand, the woman soft power thing, and both of them, frankly, are just different faces of totalitarianism. Unfortunately, the question is if this, you know, we'll go through the holidays, but January is going to open up. And if this is still going on, I'm going to start thinking, and I'm sure a lot of other people are going to start thinking, should we be moving money out of the U.S. markets? Speaking of which, the U.S. dollar index has taken a nosedive. It was trading above 100 off and on for the week, and it just took a nosedive, 2.5 points. It's now at 97.98, so it's up 8% for the year, but it's 2.5 points in a day is quite a dive. Part of it was the QE from the ECB was really disappointing, and so the euro rose against the U.S. dollar. It could have had something to do with Yellen's indication. I tend to think it was more the ECB. Yellen indicated that she will raise rates, barring a surprise in the economy. I had said last week that I thought there was a 50 to 60% chance that she'd bump it an eighth to a quarter. Now I think there's a 75% chance she's going to bump it a quarter. So I think, you know, I can't imagine if I were in her shoes, that wouldn't be what I would do. So let's take a look at the markets. The S&P had a rough couple of days, and it's now down 0.5 point for the year. Gold's down 10.5, silver down a little bit more, 10.6. DAX is one of the only few markets that's up. The German market up 14% now for the year. That's off a little bit from 2 weeks ago. The China large caps now down 11%. I didn't look at the small caps today, but they're probably down about 3 or 4%. Developed world minus North America is down 0.8% for the year. So it's almost trading with the S&P. The emerging markets down 13.85%. Bond aggregate down 1.3%. TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, is now, it was down almost 9%. It's back to down 5%. Junk is at 9%. Real problems in the junk market. Commodities now down 21%. And oil, God, down 40%, 40.8%. Oil's getting hit by a perfect storm. One, you've got the global slowdown. Two, you have the U.S. playing the oil card against Russia. You have new conventional technology that's brought on huge amounts of supply and continues to do so. And waiting in the wings and sort of sneaking in, you have new breakthrough technology. If that breakthrough technology really starts to move in, oil could have some trouble. And that's, of course, one of the big questions I keep asking, is that what's happening? But it's a perfect storm for oil. So I was hoping or I was expecting some kind of turnaround this year, but we're not even close. As I said, pain in the bond market. Some of that is coming from the oil companies, which is rocking the junk bond market. We've got some very painful periods in the junk market to go through. Inspiration. We could use some inspiration. One of my favorite documentaries on a school in Russia, which I think is the most impressive school I've ever seen, is now available for free. You used to have to pay almost $30 to get it at Deep Snow Press. It's called The School. It's up on the left. It's in Russian, but with subtitles. And if you want to be inspired and see, you know, the world-class education that your children can have, take a look. It's very, very inspiring. I put a review up this week about Ty Bollinger's series, The Truth About Cancer. I'm working my way through it. It's really inspiring. It will really inspire you to take care of your health and to find additional ways. It's got a lot of good tips, including some I didn't know about so far, so I'm really enjoying it. Year-end tax and financial planning. I decided rather than do a Salieri report in December on year-end planning, there's so many different fact patterns. I did a selection of different articles from the accounting profession, from Kiplinger, from the Wall Street Journal, that should inspire your thinking on year-end tax planning, and the couple different selections for people in different unique circumstances. So take a look at that commentary and make sure you take time to really think about what you need to do before the end of the year and then what you want to accomplish next year. Some other things up on the website I wanted to point out. I did a book review of an extraordinary book called The Half Has Never Been Told. And I called Franklin up and asked him to read it so we could talk about slavery in January on the Salieri Report, or we'll probably do it in February. It's a remarkable book. I've been looking for years for something that would give the real economic nuts and bolts of the African-American trade or the African slave trade in that we abolished in at the end of the Civil War or in the Civil War. I found a lot of interesting little nuggets. So take a look. I'll be talking about that more in the wrap up. And then when I talk with Franklin, and of course, I wanted to remind you, we keep putting, once a week, I'm putting Sunday night or Monday morning, the charts of the Friday close that I sort of look at every week. It's just my way of tracking the markets. Another couple of things I wanted to point out are we're publishing our wrap up on January 7th and our big theme is space. Here it comes. And the bill that I've been talking about that allows, it's basically a gold rush. It says, in defiance of our international treaties, in essence, what it says is if an American company finds something out or mines something out in space, they get to keep it. It belongs to them. It's theirs. As a result, the Commercial Spaceflight Federation had a hangout, a Google hangout, including people from the White House. It's up in top picks. It was on YouTube, and the recording is on YouTube. There's a lot of excitement about this bill and about the Bezos reusable rocket. And the idea now is it's economic for people to go out in space and mine asteroids. My big question and prediction is that what they're going to come back with is not necessarily what they mined. It's a cover story for trade. Our hero this week is a guy named Saker, who has a great website I link to a lot, who covers what's going on in Russia and Eastern Europe and sometimes the Middle East. He has a new one from Escobar that he published this week called Silk Roads, Night Trains, and the Third Industrial Revolution in China, which is very good. Anyway, he's been writing anonymously, and he got outed by someone, and there's a big debate over on his blog about what he should do about it. It was quite interesting. So I finally made my first post at Saker, but it happened right after his mother had died, and he'd had to go to Switzerland to deal with all of that. So it's a perfect example of how people who try and bring transparency to these things have to get attacked and have to deal. Anyway, it's a great blog. You might want to check it out. Ask Catherine. Somebody sent me a link for a trader got crushed on trading biotechs with margin and did a crowdfunding campaign begging for people to help him fund his deficit. And I haven't checked in on how he did, but basically what he said, if the banks got a bailout, maybe I should too. So somebody thought it was comical. I didn't think it was funny. I thought it was pretty sad. Anyway, but part of what we're watching is you're watching leadership and financial institutions behave badly and able to do it because you have the federal credit subsidizing all this unproductive bad behavior. And now we're watching a real debasement in the culture of many, many Americans just beginning to behave badly themselves. It's almost like a virus that's passing through the body politic. So anybody should have known he shouldn't be doing that with his wife's retirement fund. So sorry, but it's your loss. I have all these nice things I'd like to say to you. Then they all get jumbled when I try and put them in an email. Ugh. So I'll start by saying thanks. I first came across you when trying to understand my situation with my bank back in 2009. I was looking for detailed information on this thing called securitization, and I had already spoken to dozens of lawyers who had no clue what securitization was or what securitization had to do with my mortgage and my bizarre situation with the bank. It's a very big bank. There was little to nothing back then that could be found on the internet with regard to securitization, but then I came across something you wrote in the 1980s. I wish I would have saved it. In the article, you indicated that mortgage securitization was a recipe for fraud. Anyway, that's how I met you, but that is not my most recent frustration. My children go to XX school district in XX. I'm the one putting in the XX. I have a son in the 7th grade and another in 12th. My trouble is the school won't release completed and graded common assessments for the children to bring home for review. I call it a test. They call it assessment. Either way, it never leaves the school. In fact, the only way you can review the test is at school with the teacher, a member of the faculty. There is no written policy, according to the vice principal, and the teacher simply won't tell me why she can or won't release the test. The counselor has no clue who sets the policy. The vice principal indicated, then retracted, that the decision is made at the department level, but can or won't indicate who in the department or where and when the department votes or rules on these unwritten rules. But he is firm in his support of the mysterious department's decision to not release the test. But he does not know why he's supporting the decision. The kids get a dozen or so of these tests every year that are not allowed to leave the building to review with your children. You need to set an appointment at the school in the presence of faculty. This simple thing is actually driving me nuts. Who the hell has time to visit the school 40 times a year to review a test, when traditionally it was simple and something you just did at home? So I really don't know what questions to ask. I guess I'm looking for a starting point. What do you speak to about these sorts of things? How do you go about it? What books can you recommend? Is there anyone specially in these sorts of issues you can direct me to? I'm sure anything you can offer will be of help. All the best. I emailed to two teachers who I really respect tremendously and asked them what he could do, and I sent those responses to the particular subscriber. But now I'm going to tell you, if you haven't listened to my interview with Anthony Cody on the Salieri Report and read his book, you should. But what you need to know, the other thing you should read is that Dr. Farrell and a co-author have a book coming out next year on Common Core. I've written the foreword, and you should read it. But let me tell you what it's going to say. What it's going to say is that increasingly these schools are going to be organized around online systems. The people collecting every iota of data about your children are not just going to be the schools. It's going to be the intelligence agencies and large corporations. My guess is the system's going to evolve more and more towards one where there's no intervening supervision by principals, teachers. Those people are going to get more and more controlled or eased out. Or literally, the U.S. government is now paying for a study on how they can use robots to read to children, if you can imagine that. Here's what I say in the foreword to Dr. Farrell's book. What I say is, you've been warned and you have time to get your kids out. But ultimately, if you look at where this is going, it is not safe to have your children in public school. You're going to have to homeschool, or you're going to have to send them to a private school. You have to be careful because not all the private schools will be okay. But we're in a situation which is really dangerous. It wouldn't surprise me if some people finally gave up and had to leave the country. But whether it's vaccinations or online systems or access, I've had some people disclose to me teachers of surveys that have been given to the kids. I've seen the surveys. I posted one of them on the website, and these are surveys about very intimate personal information about the child and family. This was done without the parents' knowledge or permission, and the teachers, you know, have warned me literally they'll be fired if they disclose to the parents that the survey was done or why it was done, etc. So I'm just telling you, for a whole range of reasons, your children are not safe in these schools. And so, I hate to say it, but there is no, unless we have a revolution where people are willing to escrow property taxes and take the school system back, it's going to take a huge amount of local organization, and you have to have a critical mass of leadership that's willing to go into the courts and do what has to be done. But you're either going to have to take the schools back or you're going to have to get your kids out. And I think there would be nothing more wonderful in America if everybody just went down, took their kids out, and walked out. And after you did that and started homeschooling, you started sort of negotiating the escrow of the property taxes, because why should you pay for a school where there where nobody's showing up? Anyway, but get the Anthony Cody book, read that, listen to the interview, and as soon as Farrell's book comes out, I would strongly recommend. But the 411 on this is the system is basically gone. Dear Catherine, you mentioned recently that a cheap platform would need to be created. Have you seen acorns.com? It rounds up the charges on your credit debit purchases, much like spare change, and invests what would be coins tossed into a water bottle, dresser drawer, floor of car, and places it into a brokerage account. Free to college students with .edu email and $1 a month till you reach 5K with different model portfolios to choose from. Pretty spiffy. Actually, you know, if that's what it gets to get you to save, it's kind of a cute idea. Thank you for sending this. I'm reading my way through your wonderful website and came across the first workshop following the Secret Space Program 14. As I live in Australia and pay for live stream, I'm querying how those who face these same issues globally and can't make these workshops can have the same opportunity to participate. Can these workshops be live streamed and available for review 12 months after for purchase? It would also be useful if some of these future conferences and workshops your group is attending would be listed so we could afford a notice of what's available. Thank you for your work. It's greatly appreciated. I agree. It'd be great if we could stream. I would like to explore, once we get the new website launched, doing more things by stream. The reality on that workshop is there was no way I was going to record it. I wanted very tight security and people to be free to talk. Sometimes we will have these luncheons, only invite subscribers, and only tell people about them afterwards. But I was in Australia last year and spoke, and I am hoping to be back in May. So I'll make sure all the Australian subscribers know. But I agree with you. It'd be great if we could stream more. One of the reasons I try and do as much as I do with the Global BEM guys is because they do a great job of organizing, and then they stream. And a lot of us have been gathering around those. Somebody sent me a link from MarketWatch on 13 dividend aristocrat stocks with yields over 4%. Can you comment on your dividend picks? I'm under very strict attorney's advice not to give investment advice. And as an investment advisor, I've seen so much damage done to people by general advice that wasn't unique to their situation. So for those two reasons, I don't do investment advice on the Solaria Report. But let me give you some general sort of rules of thumb. First of all, stocks generally historically have done better that have a steady history of increasing dividends. So if you buy somebody a stock with a lower dividend, but that has a steady history of increasing dividends, you'll probably end up doing better than buying one with the highest possible yield. You want in this environment to look for companies that have excellence in governance and management. You want to look for companies that have brand loyalty, and possibly inelastic demand so that they have the ability to make it through hard times. The U.S. market is generally very high. It's diverged. If you go back and look at the last 5 years, the U.S. market's up 60%. The developed market away from the U.S. is up about 5%. The emerging markets is down almost 30%. So clearly, if things converge back, we're looking for a turn in the commodities in emerging markets where you could get glorious opportunity for dividends, particularly if the dollar falls. So if you can buy in the bottom at commodities in emerging markets, and of course the question is when, we don't know, but it's one of the things I'm going to be looking for in 2016, because that's where you can absolutely begin to lock in some dividends. Obviously, if interest rates start to rise, there's going to be opportunities there as well. Beware reaching for yield. We've got a shakeout coming, particularly in the bond markets and really in the junk bond markets. So with yields rising, you want to be careful. You want to be careful and stay away from reaching for yield, because you could really get clobbered in this environment. And I understand it's hard not to want to. If you look at the average American family, one of their biggest financial problems is starting in 1990. They were making 6 to 8% risk-free on their bank deposits and in the fixed income markets, and now they're making 0%. And that's been a glorious subsidy to the federal government, which is, of course, as we lose our money, is turning around and, you know, sending checks to all of us, which makes us very, very dependent. Let's go to the movies. Great documentary. It's called Casting By. It's about the work of casting director Marion Dougherty, sort of the queen bee of all casting directors, who taught and trained many of the existing current casting directors. It's an exceptional documentary. You need to watch all the way to the end. And what you realize is, oh, this is a woman who can really see, you know, who can really see the spiritual reality. You know, sometimes people say, oh, they can see auras. This is a woman who can see the electromagnetic sort of reality of every human being and figure out how they connect. And you kind of see the artistry of how she did it. And it's a very interesting slice of history. And if you enjoy the movie business, or sort of using movies as much as I do, I lived in New York for many years and loved theater. So she really came out of a New York theater tradition more than the Hollywood tradition. But it's a very, very interesting, very interesting documentary on a slice of that life. Our interview tonight is very interesting with Rosa Quar on UN Agenda 21. I really keep trying to encourage all the Salir Report subscribers, instead of paying attention to national politics, I keep saying that the country is controlled one county at a time. You know, it's really controlled bottom up at the county and municipal level. That's where the action is. And the UN Agenda 21 is something that's rolling through. A lot of it comes through the federal regulations and budgets, you know, the HUD plans that make everybody do more and more planning. And if you look at the lot of controls, there's a lot of effort, particularly using Agenda 21, to basically push everybody in the cities. Currently, with 3,100 counties, 50% of the population now lives in 146 counties, if you can imagine that. And, you know, so you're seeing the federal budget and federal regulations, including Agenda 21, really used to a form of social engineering and push people off the land. It's not unlike what Sir James Goldsmith talks about in that wonderful video that I keep trying to make sure everybody who's a Salir Report subscriber watches. Anyway, but Rose and I have she's extremely knowledgeable, one of the most knowledgeable people in the country on Agenda 21. She worked in the California state government and knew a lot about land use and has done a lot of work with litigation on land use, and is... when you're watching the nuts and bolts of what's happening, it's pretty appalling, but she and her books have done a good job of describing it. So this is something you need to know is going on. And with the new meeting in September at the UN, you know, there's a new development plan out. We talk a little bit about it. So there it is, Agenda 21. It's something we all need to know about. And I would encourage you to listen to that interview and sort of see what's going on in the county around you. Okay, that's it in closing. Coming up, we have, I asked Clifford Carnicom to do an update on global spraying. That will be next week. We have an interview, two interviews with Clifford, but sort of a mega interview with Clifford. And one of the things we do is update his 7 theories on what global spraying might be used to do. And he basically says nothing's changed. And so I would encourage you not only to listen to the new interview, but get that, you know, our big special with Clifford Carnicom. It's a 60-page transcript, but it's a classic. Then December 17th, we're going to try a new thing. I've asked Junius Ricardo Stanton to host a panel on Home and Square in Chicago. It's a local detention center where 7,000 people, according to The Guardian, have been disappeared. And the name of the panel, as we're saying, is somebody prototyping the domestic rendition. It's going to be Junius Ricardo Stanton. Former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney will be joining us from Asia, and another radio show host. And we're going to record it, and then... Junius is going to be running it on our station, his stations, and the radio host will be running it on his stations, and we'll be running it on the Salir Report. And that's This is a very important conversation because this is something you want to nip in the bud. Again, as I talked about earlier tonight, if lockdown is coming because they're getting ready to re-engineer the budget and the money, we want to make sure we're in at the table having a conversation about the money as opposed to afraid to have that conversation because these kind of things are going on. Then as we did last year for December 24th and December 31st, basically Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, we'll be doing the Best of Archives. And then January 7th, Space, Here It Comes, the annual wrap-up, my favorite piece of the year. This one is going to be fantastic. Last year was fantastic. And if you want to read last year's, for our Best of the Archives, we're going to be doing a wrap-up of the wrap-ups because this year's wrap-ups were really sensational. And then the wrap-up will be followed by our sort of wrap-up discussion with Dr. Joseph Farrell. And then I'm going to be combining a written interview by Rambus with my equity overview. So January is going to be very delicious. So until next week with Clifford Carnicom, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.